from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
And let's go out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Connor O'Gara joining me here from Saturday down south. Week one action. Big week of football here in the SEC. So let's bring him in, talk a little bit about this. Connor, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. Once week one kind of comes to a close, it's always a bit surreal. I'm like, wow, that was a full weekend of football, like wall-to-wall action. Man, we're recording this before Monday. We see what Florida State does for its encore. But yeah, that week one, man, it's a blur. You feel like the stuff that happened on Thursday was like, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah, all of the talking season from June, July, and August, it all gets put to the test here. So that actually kind of lends itself to the first question that I have for you, Connor. It's the winners and losers from week one. It's hard to really go too deep into it. I know everybody really wants to. Last segment, I was going to come in and do the biggest overreactions from the week. I have tons of overreactions, but I want to ask you what your overreactions are. Biggest winners and losers, what you got?
Yeah, biggest winner, Miami. I mean, Miami, what it did in the swamp was such a loud statement. And I was not on the Miami train this offseason at all. I'm like, what are we doing? We've been doing this for the last 20 years. I understand that we all love Cam Ward. We love the fact that Mario Cristobal took a more aggressive approach in the portal, getting a guy like Damian Martinez coming on board, Tyler Barron, you add him to that defensive line, which you already felt pretty good about. And you kind of wonder, what is it all going to mean, especially in an opener, a hostile atmosphere? And my God, they took over that place. The Swamp, even when Florida is not good, is still a tough place to play. Mm-hmm. And for them to come in and set the tone in such emphatic fashion, to me, stood out. It wasn't fluky. It was dominance. And even when it was a one-score game, kind of early in the second quarter, I'm texting with my co-host, Will Ogburn, Miami's a better football team. And if Miami doesn't win this game, this is going to be a huge indictment of Mario Cristobal. And instead, it turns into just a bloodbath. And I thought Miami was absolutely the biggest winner. Maybe USC you could throw in there as well. I think that's probably the biggest narrative-changing win that Lincoln Riley has had since that Florida Bowl game that they won. I think it was it ended up being, the Cotton Bowl. They moved mm-hmm. bowl games all around, whatever that was. But for the first time in a long time, Lincoln Riley gave us something that made us feel different about him by beating that LSU team, an LSU team that obviously has struggled in openers. But yeah, to me, those were the two biggest winners. And then those two teams, LSU and Florida, are the biggest losers, because on that stage, I thought for different reasons, they kind of got embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And they are the subject of a lot of criticism this week. The SEC as a whole, I think, took it on the chin a little bit, with the exception of Georgia and Vandy. But yeah, to me, those are the four teams that kind of stand out just in terms of us thinking differently about them, or at least having stronger opinions about what they just did.
Yeah. So keeping it kind of in the state of Florida, just with Billy Napier and company, I mean, they kind of got out physical in this, not kind of, they got out physical yeah. in this game. They got beat up and down the field. And that was something that when Billy Napier was hired, I always expected him to come in and kind of bring that physicality that I felt like Dan Mullen was missing at times. That hasn't been the case, really. And then on top of that, you have the Scott Strickland, the Florida athletic director, that's coming in and saying that there's no need to make a change. There's nothing else that's going to be coming down the track.
Sure.
It would be an expensive firing. I think he's owed $26 million up front or something like that, right up front. I'm not sure what the exact number is. I think it's somewhere in that ballpark. But it's going to be expensive. But is it even more expensive in the fact that you're going to cost yourself fans and support, and this program is going to start faltering down the stretch? I mean, what is the situation down there in Florida?
It's bad. It's terrible. This coaching staff couldn't have asked for a worse start. You have 8 months of telling people, don't worry about the schedule. We're going to take it 1 week at a time, 1 week at a time. And then you show up and you have that against your in-state rival. And the stadium is clearing out. And for that to happen in a season opener is just such a gut punch, because there are people that when people that would say like, oh, you're sleeping on Florida, everybody's sleeping on Florida. It's like, well, no, I'm not. They've had three consecutive losing seasons. This is the way that works. Mm-hmm. And you're still trying to show that you can actually build towards SEC relevance with this head coach. And to have that type of showing, yeah, I don't think it's crazy for Florida fans to want more. I don't want to hear from Scott Strickland that, oh, you know, we're not in any hurry to make a change. He's not going to be the one that's going to get to make that decision, because if Billy Napier gets fired, I understand Florida's an everything school. Scott Strickland's getting fired too if that happens. Yeah. And I know the Ben Sass stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of debate about what it's going to look like at the top of the university. They will find a way to fire a head football coach if they have half empty stadiums in October. I promise you that. So the number, yes, it is high. 26.7, I think, was the latest that I saw.
With Billy Napier. Close.
Yeah, you were spot on. So, like, that's the ballpark. And up until last year, we had never seen anybody pay that type of money to move on from a head coach. And then Texas A&M did what Texas A&M did by firing Jimbo Fisher. But I do think that for those who are saying, well, Florida fans, you just need to be patient. Why? What's the proof of concept for Billy Napier at this point? Because everything he said he was going to do, he has not done. And if you're not going to even have that ounce of physicality, which last year against Kentucky, when they just got punched in the mouth by that Mark Stoops coach team, all these Florida fans are like, wait a minute, Kentucky's doing what you said you were going to bring here, and they don't even have that yet. So to me, I will not hate on Florida if it cuts its losses after a 5-7 season. To me, that's not the sign of impatience. That's just the sign of incompetence.
Yeah, it was a tough showing for Florida. I mean, then you have the videos coming around and circulating on social media about the Miami players walking off the field and recruiting their recruits and everything else. It was just sort of an ugly scene for all parties involved, unless you're a Miami Hurricane. But Connor O'Gara joining me on the waitfor.com hotline here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It was a bit of a mixed bag, I'd say, for the SEC. You said they took it on the chin. I tend to agree. Except for that team in Athens. But before I move into the positive things that we did see from the conference, I want to finish up in the negative side of it. I don't want to necessarily say it that way, but the negatives, they lost. We talked about LSU. We talked about Florida. But Texas A&M, they took it on the chin. They lost to Notre Dame, a pretty good football team, a team with a lot of question marks. The offensive line had 6 combined starts, but that defense really still showed its colors. They looked pretty good. But Connor Wegman felt like he just wasn't quite enough. Is that a sign of things to come, or what did you learn from the Aggies?
Yeah, I think it's tough because Texas A&M was a 3-point favorite in this one. I don't remember what the final line ended up being, but A&M was favored to win this game because, or at least in position two, because of the biggest mismatch, or at least the biggest perceived mismatch in this game, was that Texas A&M defensive line with Nix Gordon, with Shamar Turner, Shamar Stewart, against this Notre Dame offensive line that you talked about with 6 combined starts. It's a post Joe Alt world that the Irish were living in. And you have a new starting quarterback in Riley Leonard, who is facing the defensive minded head coach that saw him every day for 2 years in Mike Elko. Yeah. So all those things, you kind of add it up and you're like, yeah, 107,000 fans on the road. This isn't the type of game that Notre Dame wins. And I think there were a lot of people that went into that saying, yeah, I could see A&M being able to get that home crowd fueled win in week one. And instead, down the stretch, I thought you saw the deficiencies that A&M has right now as a program. And I love the Colin Klein hire, and I am a Connor Wegman believer through and through. He spells his first name incorrectly, in my very biased opinion. That's another subject for another time. But I do think that he's going to have better days ahead. I think Colin Klein as a whole will have better days ahead. The issue is their offensive line is still not particularly good. And the different blitz packages that you saw Al Golden and Marcus Freeman throw at A&M had them rattled all game. Connor Wegman couldn't find anything in the passing game. And those Notre Dame defensive backs were going to the football better than his receivers were. So as much as I love Wegman, it's still about the surrounding pieces not being great. And you could tell that was impacting his decision-making. And I'm not trying to let him off the hook, because he wasn't good enough to be able to win that football game. But down the stretch, they had no identity. I mean, he's throwing 9-yard outs to his running back as his primary target to try and pick up big first downs. And Le'Veon Moss can't pick up the first down because he doesn't have the presence of mind to stretch the football out to the first down mark. And you're like, man, that's kind of a sign of where this program and where this offense is at. They're searching for an identity. They really could have used Evan Stewart, who transferred to Oregon. Unfortunately, he's not with that team anymore. But yeah, man, A&M had an opportunity sitting right there to get a momentum-shifting win to start off the Mike Elko era. And instead, you look up and Notre Dame does something that very few people thought they would be capable of, which was closing down the stretch against a top 25 team on the road. And Marcus Freeman and company, they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, huge win for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame. Bad day for all the haters of Notre Dame and that football program. But look, I mean, I like Texas A&M. I think they still have everything in front of them. They can still be maybe not a contender in the SEC, but a team to who can really jump into that realm of a top 25 team consistently on a week-in, week-out basis with Mike Elko this season specifically. The defense is going to be enough to carry them at times, but I need to see a little bit more from that offense. But one team that really hung its hat on some dominating defense were the Georgia Bulldogs. They came out in the second half and just absolutely obliterated Clemson. I mean, it was just a man versus boys. And in fact, the most damning thing I'd say about that game is the reaction that people had about it. They said, in no uncertain terms, it is like, yeah, well, Georgia does that to a lot of teams. Well, Clemson is not a lot of teams, or at least they're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be one of those championship contenders. Do you think that final score and the way everything ended up happening, does that say more about Georgia or does it say more about Clemson?
Clemson. Says way more about Clemson. And I thought Danny Cannell's take sucked. And I like DK.
You saw really that did. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I love DK. DK's a good dude. He's actually a lot better away from social media than he is on social media. But I thought that point about, well, you know, Ole Miss gets beat up by Georgia. You know, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is not sitting there going, I wonder if we should go after this guy in the portal. Lane Kiffin exhausts all resources. Dabo Swinney gets paid eight figures, and he's not exhausting all resources. He's telling us he doesn't feel like he has to exhaust all resources, and he's wrong. And if you're telling me, all right, well, you know what? One transfer wasn't going to make the difference in that football game. And you know, even if they had gone after certain guys in the transfer portal, maybe it's not going to make the difference. But who's scoring those touchdowns for Georgia in the third quarter of that game? Transfers. Colby Young, London Humphreys. Both of those guys coming over this year in what is the first year without Brock Bowers, without Ladd McConkey. They lose Ra-Ra Thomas to the domestic violence arrest that he had in the offseason. They needed to beef up those receivers via the transfer portal. Kirby is using the portal the way that Dabo should be. You have areas of need in your position group, and you go out and you say, you know what? Let's plug and play that guy. I don't care if we get him for 1 or 2 years. We have an issue there. We need to be able to bring him in, and we need to be able to get somebody on board that's going to help us now. And instead, Dabo is under the belief that his development is so unbelievably good. You know what's not good? The fact that Clemson in the last 3 years has had two offensive players drafted. An offensive lineman who went in the fifth round and Will Shipley went in the fourth round. Clemson hasn't had an offensive player drafted in the first 2 days of the NFL draft since 2021, the Travis Etienne, Trevor Lawrence draft. That's terrible. That's a joke. That to me is a sign of a program that has fallen off. This is not a tier one program anymore. They had a really nice first half because they came out defensively, and I thought their defensive line really got after it, and they deserve a ton of credit for it. But they've fallen off, and this is not a program that's going to compete for an ACC championship. I think people were saying that. We're sipping the Kool-Aid for whatever reason, and to me, this is a sign that Dabo, in this adapt or die world, he's doing the latter, and it's not really debatable.
Yeah, I mean, Clemson's fallen off in a big way, and I think it just comes down to missing on the quarterback position, missing at the wide receiver position. And I think you hinted at it, or you said it pretty much, and it's the fact that he believes that the guys on his roster are better than what you can find in the transfer portal.
And they're not. And
they're just not. And the proof is in the pudding. It's the fact that the results have shown and dictated over the last couple of years that Clemson is just not the program that they were. I had it in my overreaction that Clemson is dead and gone as a championship contender. And it's just the fact of the matter at this point in Dabo Swinney's career. It doesn't overshadow the things that he accomplished back in the 2010s, where he won multiple national championships and was the second best program without question over about a 10-year period. Those days are gone. It doesn't diminish what he did then, but it certainly does not mean that he is still the guy that he was then, especially that program. But one other thing I want to mention here, finishing up with Connor O'Gara here on the waitforit.com hotline on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The SEC had several explosive outputs in week one. Of course, you mentioned Ole Miss. They dropped 76 points in their season opener. Arkansas against Arkansas Pine Bluff. They go crazy. You have Auburn shortening their quarters in the second half to 10 minutes because they're beating Alabama A&M. Is that just a product of the teams they're playing, which I think that has a lot to do with it. Or do you think that some of those offenses, specifically Auburn, who had some problems last year, have they sort of figured their way through those issues? And are they ready to really compete and try to take that next step in the SEC this season?
Yeah, I don't think all of those offenses are necessarily going to be world beaters. I think Arkansas is going to have a lot of positive moments. One of my biggest upsets that I had in the preseason was I have Arkansas beating Tennessee in a few weeks when they come to Fayetteville. And I think that Taylen Green kind of showed you why he's going to be week to week a really difficult guy to prepare for. It doesn't mean that Arkansas is all of a sudden going to be 8-4 or anything like that. But I just think that combination with he and Bobby Petrino is going to be really effective. Sam Pittman having a more involved role in the offensive line. I do think that's going to yield some positive results, and they're going to be a difficult team to have to play 60 minutes with. But I think the confirmation bias was certainly there. And, you know, you could look across a team like Auburn and see what they endured last year, which was painful. I mean, at one point I remember writing like a 2,500 word column about the 10 things I'd rather do than watch Auburn throw the football. And it was like, go get my wisdom teeth out, which I still haven't done yet. And like all these other, clean the showers, get a deep clean going. It was terrible. I mean, it was an absolute joke watching what they attempted to do throwing the football, like wholesale, not just any one specific, but like every element, the scheme, the quarterback, the offensive line, the receivers, like all of it was terrible. And this year with Hugh Freeze taking control of those play calling duties, I do think Peyton Thorne ends up being the SEC's most improved player. And I say that as someone that was really critical of him last year, but I do think the post-spring quarterback transfers are set up to fail year one. In year two, it's a much different story. He obviously has a lot more of those weapons available to him in the passing game, and that's going to be a big, big help with Keandre Lambert-Smith and Cam Coleman. Everybody's so excited about this freshman receiver class. But I think you saw shades of that, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case week in, week out. But this week's going to be a really good indicator of how much that year-to-year improvement's there, because they face a Cal team that, quite frankly, last year, like, they basically made them run the football, and Eugene Asante was ridiculous in that game in Berkeley, and they had to win a game that, look, I don't really think they had any business winning, but Jaden Ott gets hurt in the second half of that one, and they're able to pull it out on the road. But I think it's going to be a different story, different offensive game plan, and we're going to see Garrett. We're going to see a lot more from Peyton Thorne this season. And I think this game is going to be kind of the first indication of that.
Yeah. Peyton Thorne, I had him as one of the biggest risers in the SEC this season too, this offseason, just with the presence of legitimate bona fide wide receivers on that roster now. And I think they're young and they have a long way to go. But that's why you get a Lambert Smith, a guy like that in there who can really bridge that gap. See, that transfer portal works, Dabo. Last one here, really quickly, about 30 seconds here. I have Nico Amoleva as my biggest X factor in the SEC because of what he could potentially do in the conference. It just is a really successful quarterback and kind of keeping Tennessee ahead of the chains. What say you as far as an X factor, one player who could really overturn what your expectations are in the conference?
Nico's the truth, man.
I love
Nico. Nico Amoleva, say it with your chest. The full name is worth it. look. The guy is like, spend 5 minutes watching him and you'll get it. And you'll get that Tennessee fans are not crazy to be this in love with the quarterback. The things that he can do, man, it is so special. The off platform, the deep stuff, what he does hitting receivers in stride, even his mobility, some of the things that he can do in the ground game to be able to kind of keep you ahead of schedule. It's just like he does all the little things well. And then with the fact that he's got Josh Heupel and being able to have this offense that is just so prolific in the ground game too. I love all of it. And I do have concerns about Tennessee's defense in the back end, but man, if there's ever a guy that can kind of change the trajectory of what a program is capable of, Nico Amoleva, stay with your chest. He is that dude.
He's pretty talented. And if you didn't have a chance to watch him, you guys should all go make sure you check him out week two, because he is that guy. Very excited to see what he can do. And the SEC is back. Football is back. Connor Roguero, Saturday Down South. Thank you so much for joining me here.
Appreciate it, man.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.